Natalie to be interviewed for the shooting incident, which was the murder of Oscar Grant. He did not attempt to charge Johannes Mezeli with insubordination for his failure to report his shooting of Oscar Grant. He did nothing but what he thought would help him and Bart weather the storm that was brewing in the Bay. Bart board members apologized profusely, some of them. Yet while some members made an apology personally, its board authorized its attorney to fight any and all attempts at justice being made by the victims in the murder of Oscar Grant by its poorly trained and rogue officers who participated in the murder of Oscar Grant. As a result, no officer, no, not one, has yet to be disciplined for their action or inaction on the night that Oscar was murdered. None have been disciplined for their roles in the murder, and even after testimony from its officers in the preliminary hearings that so shocked Alameda County judges that two judges questioned the validity of the reports and the testimony made by Bart police. In the first hearing, the judge was exceedingly clear that what Bart police Johannes Mezeli's defense offered made no sense. So when they declared that he thought that Oscar had a gun, yet he pulled a taser in response to the thought that there was a gun, was surely demonstration to the first judge that something is wrong with what you're saying. When the second judge, Clay, took on the case, and he began to hear out of the testimony of Bart police their racial hatred, their expressed insecurities, their inconsistent testimonies, and their manipulation of the factual evidence, Bart's attorneys, rather than to find a way to satisfy justice, have turned their attack on the victims that were on the platform on that evening and have attempted to criminalize and demonize Oscar and his friends. Bart has not attempted to bring justice. Bart has only attempted to weather a storm. Oscar Grant and his friends, having been criminalized and demonized by Bart attorneys and defense attorneys to frighten potential jurors and victims away from the demands for justice. The events of January the 1st had nothing to do with the past histories of Oscar Grant, of Michael Greer, of Jack's sons, nor any other of the young men that were on the platform of that night. The murder of Oscar Grant had far more to do with the past attitudes and training of the bar officers, particularly Anthony Peroni, Johannes Mezeli, and Marisol Dominici. Officer Peroni admitted after challenge in court that he called Oscar Grant, and I won't cuss because we're in church, but he called Oscar the B word, the A word, and the N word, and 30 seconds later, Oscar was shot and killed by Johannes Mezeli. Officer Dominici testified that she approached the BART train, that she thought that she knew she was going to have to kill somebody when she arrived at the platform. A remark so startling, given the facts and the video evidence, that Judge Clay was so shocked he posed the question, just who were you going to shoot that night? A remark that demonstrated the poor training, the poor attitude, the insecurities, and the incompetence of BART police on the night of January the 1st, 2009. Now keep in mind that neither Oscar Grant nor his friends were in possession of any weapon, Nor were Oscar Grant and his friends clearly a suspect for any crime. Officer Peroni testified that if Oscar Grant, a young man whose name he did not know on January the 1st, he declared in court that had Oscar Grant not been killed, that he never would have even asked him his name. In other words, there was no cause that Oscar and his friends be detained. There was no cause that Oscar and his friends be arrested. Since there was no cause for arresting Oscar and his friends, how can Bart now justify the manner and strategy in which its attorneys are attacking the reputation of Oscar and his friends? Officer Peroni had no history for Oscar and his friends, except he knew that he was dealing with black and brown young men and women. Their only sin was the color of their skin and their unwillingness to accept being abused by voicing their opinions of disgust at the officers that were brutalizing them. The recent settlement is not settled. Let me say that again. The recent settlement announcement made by Bart is not settled. Oscar Grant's mother has not been consulted by Bart over its dialogue with the mother of Oscar's child, our sister Sophina. Bart made Sophina an offer, not because they were seeking what was best for their child, Sister Tatiana. Bart was seeking what is best for Bart. Right. This attempt at a settlement was not an effort to do the right thing, as Michael Raines declared, the defense attorney for Johannes Messerli. Quite frankly, it was an effort to weather a storm. I don't know about you, but it didn't do anything but stir up the storm. They're now stirring up a bee's nest. I think that they've been reading the tea leaves by coming into the board meetings and not seeing Dave sit there, and not seeing Wilson sitting there, and not seeing Siri sitting there. And maybe they have felt that since the trial has left the Bay Area, that their trial is over. Quite frankly, their trial has just begun. This storm can only be resolved with justice. Bart should meet with the mother of Oscar Grant, her attorneys, and family to resolve what is best and right. Revealing to the press this quote-unquote settlement before all of its issues with the Oscar Grant family are settled demonstrates Bart's desire to resolve this matter by playing games with the hearts and souls of the family of Oscar Grant. Quite frankly, is disingenuous. This effort will not help Bart weather this storm. This storm can only be held back by justice for the murder of Oscar Grant, and justice for his family and for the people of the state of California. So I wanted to just share some thoughts with you. There's still work to be done. And I don't want us to turn our attention against some of the participants in what have happened thus far, because a family needs to meet, organize, agree, and move forward. And I don't think it would be appropriate for us to intervene in that family's need for time to make a decision and to do what is best for the family in the murder of Oscar Grant. So just keep in mind, the $1.5 million settlement requires a judge's approval. It is a partial settlement. My friend tells me that the judge cannot approve it until it is fully complete. So there's time that will elapse between the attempted settlement of a few days ago and what the end product will be. And so stay vigilant. Watch, these folks are slick. You know, it's not easy to catch a snake. You ever watch them people in the, they gotta catch that cobra with their hand? Well, if you don't know what you're doing, that cobra will kill you. Is that right?
Bart is a snake of the grafted type. And if we're not careful, it will bite everybody's children. So we got to be very clear that this is not over. Really, they just stirred up a hornet's nest. How many of you were angered when you saw that $1.5 million alleged settlement? They give you more for that if they kill your dog on the street. That's true. So we want to be very clear, and we want it known that the community is not pleased with the settlement. This settlement is not settled. And I don't want to take any more of our time because we have special guests here, and I hate to belabor their time, but I wanted to get that out of the way before they get to the very important subject that we have called you here today. I want to thank Sister Judy publicly for taking a lead along with Sister Ann for stepping forward to help us to begin gathering our items for a donation to Haiti. I don't see the young lady that came in just a few moments ago. A sister came in with a bag. She gave it to you. She came in with a bag full of necessities to be gathered along with that which will be collected here at the coffee shop near the mosque and at six other locations where canisters are to be delivered for the collection of items to help our families that are suffering there in Haiti. Now, allow me to introduce our very special guest who, one more. I got an email from Sister Dr. Tosco. She's probably coming down in an airport right around now to return back from serving a large number of people as a medical doctor. Has brought her back into the States, and God willing, she'll be home very soon. So now, please allow me to introduce our very special guest. I read in the newspaper that an Oakland citizen from Haiti traveled to Haiti shortly before the horrific earthquake, and there was great concern that kept us in front of our chairs over who it was from our city that may have been trapped there in Haiti and certainly could have been among the victims of that great quake. Well, that brother who we saw on the news made it home safely by God's grace with his family, and he has joined us here on this afternoon. There are two wonderful brothers here, and I'm going to bring them both up and they can decide who will have the first words, because they're very wonderful men. That brother that survived is our brother, the attorney, Walter Riley. So, Mr. Riley, come on now. And by his side is his partner in activism, that also from Haiti, that has been working for a number of years to support the struggle of people in Haiti. I won't take any time going through that history because these men know that history far better than I do. So I want you to join me in receiving to the microphone, along with Mr. Riley, our brother who works with the Haiti Action Committee. Please receive our brother Pierre Labossiere. Please bring him on.
Pierre says I should start. You can hear me.
Yes.
I have a photograph here that symbolizes Haiti, Jamaica. This is a statue that was out in front of the palace. I believe it's still there. It's of a slave blowing on a conch shell. Haitians recognize that every place in the world. And in many of the Caribbean communities, people recognize that. That's the Maroon that we talk about in English. And we call the communities of escaped slaves and people who freed themselves and built communities, maroon communities. And they are all over the Caribbean. That symbol of Haiti and the freedom that people were able to win against the slave masters in France is part of the reason for the repression of Haiti and the oppression of Haiti by the Western world for all these years. I heard Pierre say, and it resonates with me, and I may be stealing a line from him, that Haiti today is what Cuba is for much of the world. Haiti in the 1800s is what Cuba was for today, for the world, because Haiti represented the struggle for freedom. It's the only successful slave rebellion in history. And I'm talking about the Russian serfs rebelling, I'm talking about the Italian serfs rebelling, Italian slaves rebelling, the slave rebellions in South America. Haiti is the only successful slave rebellion. And in Haiti, that successful slave rebellion led to an example for Latin American liberation. It is because of Haiti that Simon Bolivar was successful. Yes. And we can talk more about those things. I am learning that what has happened now, because I was in Haiti at the time of the earthquake, has given me a voice to talk to a lot of people. So there's a lot to be said. Sometimes it seems like I can talk for days, because there's so much to be said about Haiti and what has happened to Haiti, what is happening to Haiti, and what we need to look forward to for Haiti. Pierre, of course, is the eminent historian here and leader of much of the community work here as Haitian. I am chair of the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, and this fund was put together in 2004. I've been working around issues in Haiti for longer than that. But in 2004, the popular elected president of Haiti was deposed by the United States, kidnapped and taken to the Central Republic of Africa. And he was kidnapped because it was clear that the engineered attempt to overthrow him with some 200 trained thugs, trained by the United States, could not, in fact, enter Port-au-Prince. They were held up outside of Port-au-Prince, and with all the ammunition, with all the international support that they had, with all the press that they had, those thugs could not enter Port-au-Prince, even though the elite in Haiti had called for the overthrow of Aristide. And those 200 thugs held up miles and miles in a village outside of Port-au-Prince, and needed to have the U.S. Army to usher them in. And they needed to have Aristide out. Now, if you remember, on the weekend before Aristide was removed, a group of elite in Haiti allied to the United States and were carrying out policies for maximizing profits, called for the removal of Aristide. Because of efforts on the part of many people here in this country and other places in the world, the U.S. had to react. And Colin Powell had said he would not allow these thugs to overthrow a democratically elected president. And he gave the elite, the group of 184 and their cabal, until Tuesday to stand down. On Tuesday of that week, the group said, "We're not standing down," perhaps because they had gotten some word, just as the oligarchy in Honduras got word from somebody that they were going to get support, and they really didn't have to worry about the State Department taking them on. That was true in Haiti. Now I'm going to talk a long time. I'm going to try not to talk a long time for you. But raise your hand if it's causing you to glaze over. This is an opportunity for us to turn our faces to Haiti. It's an opportunity for us to talk about what's going on and to understand in some detail, so that when we go out with all the warmth in our heart and the generosity in our heart, we are going to need to be steeled and informed against the attacks that we will have to deal with.
That's right.
So I want to talk a little bit. On Tuesday of that week, the cabal didn't stand down, and Powell gave them until Thursday or so of that week to stand down with all of his force. This is under the Bush administration and our Secretary of State. On Wednesday, Barbara Lee says that she and members of the Black Caucus went to meet with Powell and extract a promise from him that he would not allow this ragtag group of 200 people to create the kind of disturbance that would cause an overthrow of the president of Haiti. And Powell promised that he would not allow it. Thursday, a deadline appeared, and the cabal still didn't stand down. And by this time, Powell was learning that other forces in the world were gathering to support Aristide. By Saturday, the group was gathering forces. The people of the city of Soleil were organized. The streets were prepared to bury anybody who came to remove Aristide. The U.S. had no ability to invade openly, so the Marines on the ground in the Port-au-Prince started to organize themselves to figure out other ways that they could follow the orders of their government, our government, to remove Aristide. On Saturday, a plane going from South Africa was on its way to Port-au-Prince. That plane carried soldiers, carried people with arms. Because remember that when Aristide was in elected to office, the U.S. had forbade the importation or exportation to Haiti of arms. So the policemen were not armed. They had no real arms. One policeman in the northern province had a 45 trying to defend his police station against 200 men armed with heavy automatic weapons provided by the United States. He said he couldn't stand and fight. They took over that kind of police station. But anytime they were able to face the large numbers of people, they backed down. And that was what they were facing in Port-au-Prince. So Saturday, realizing that this plane was on the way of people that would guard Aristide in the palace and the democracy that the people had fought for, the U.S. knew they had to move much more rapidly. Saturday night and Sunday morning, the forces went in to the palace and told Aristide that he had to leave, and he was escorted out with U.S. soldiers, by U.S. soldiers, taken to an airplane. That plane that had landed for fueling in Jamaica was not able to make it to Port-au-Prince, where Aristide would have been protected. That was the cause of rushing to remove Aristide by kidnapping him. There was no chance for a long-term political process because that force would not have allowed it to happen. And Aristide was taken out. We, in the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, those of us who were active political participants in the struggle, formed the Relief Fund because we knew our friends who were organizing on the ground, men and women who were doing grassroots work, people who were part of the La Valasse movement, which is the political party of President Aristide, were being harassed. The present leader of La Valasse in Haiti on the ground right now is Dr. Maryse Nansens. She's a doctor. On the night that Aristide was removed, she had to rush to a place for safety because her home was under attack. We know that other people had to go into safety because once they learned that Aristide was under attack, their homes were in jeopardy, their lives were in jeopardy. Some were able to make it out, some didn't. Some 10,000 or more people were killed by the Ouattara government. That's something. And I know that you know what's going on in Haiti, and you didn't realize that the numbers are so great, that so many people were tortured, people thrown in jail. Many people made it into hiding. And what we did was to help sustain those people, both in Haiti, internally, and outside of Haiti. That's who we are. We're not your charity organization. We are the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. But we provide support for people who are engaged in struggle. We give money to people on the ground so that their schools can continue to operate, so that those kids who were being forced out of school and displaced after the coup could have free schools. so they could have uniforms and buy books and so they could eat. We help to support women's organizations that are dealing with the violence that women have to in every circumstance. Women are the brunt of the repression whenever we're dealing with the force of arms, disorganization, deal with the brutality that can exist in a home, in a situation where people are without money and doing a strong survival. The people who have to deal with raising children, we deal with those issues with women. We support not only the schools and clinics that they are a part of, but we support them in their mass organizations. We have supported women who are building market programs. We give money to market women who need money to buy products so they can sell in the market. A few years ago, well, less than a few years ago, just recently, one of the groups of market women trying to sell their goods and develop a livelihood were under the repression of the Pahlavi government, and they were outlawed in the market square. They were told they had to sell their goods outside of town. Well, if nobody is around, you can't sell goods. You have nothing to sell. And they were persecuted for being in town. We supported those people with both political action, financial support, loaning them money, helping to buy products, and helping them to support illegal actions to try and maintain their ability to sell. I was in Haiti as the chair of the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund to interview some of these groups that we work with. Also, I was there to document some of the abuses. I'm a civil rights attorney. Sometimes I do a lot of criminal defense. I was in Haiti talking to people who have been attacked by the UN, talking to people who are organizing. One of the people I talked to is a young man who is, as a young man now, disfigured. His face was shot up and he has a distorted countenance. He was 13 years old when he was walking across an intersection with another group of 13-year-olds. And as they walked towards a group of UN soldiers, they were shot for no reason. They weren't rowdy. There's document evidence. They weren't causing a disturbance. They were just shot because there were UN forces that could do it. They were Jordanian soldiers that did this. And they don't have any recourse in Jordan. And they don't have recourse at the UN, and this case is still being pursued. There are other cases that I started to talk to people about, and we're still documenting those things. These people presented their grievance to the UN, but nothing is being done. We intend to pursue that, along with Mario Joseph, who is the leading civil rights attorney in Haiti. Mario Joseph represents people who have engaged in political work and are being prosecuted and persecuted. Mario Joseph represents a lot of people who are in the prison. And Mario said on television the other day, it took the act of the earthquake to free these people who had no, who should not have been in prison anyway. Yeah. Many people were still in jail from 2004, simply because they were members of Lava Lost, people who were organizing. Not only were they not charged and brought to court or convicted, but they had no stated reason for having them in jail. So they never had charges, never faced a judge, never saw any process for all these years they were in prison. And when the earthquake tore down some walls, those folks, some of them were able to get out. We don't know how many of those people got out. We do know that they had to face bullets because as they were leaving, they were guards shot point blank into the crowd. We also know that as they were leaving, we were told by people who left prisons, people that we have worked with, who were political organizers, who were in jail, that the guards had set drums of gasoline and oil on fire to block them, and they had to run through fire. These are innocent people. These are people who are in jail because of their political activity. Some of these people are in jail for such things as just maybe stealing a goat. And these are not the political people. Mario says that 90% of the people in that prison had not been charged, had not been brought before a judge. A large number of those people were totally political activists. No pretense of a crime. Some of the people we know that were in jail, that have been in jail, have come through this area. Father Jean Juste was in prison. Father Jean Juste didn't get the process. Father Jean Juste got out because he was well known, and we were able to build an international movement to support him. But he got out because he was dying of cancer, not because of the adjudication. And there are others. But the ones that are not known, that don't have a national reputation, don't have an international following, those people that we help, that many other people in Haiti are working with, and both Port-au-Prince and the rural areas, were there and languishing. This government was not a government that was helping the people. The prisoners didn't get fed in jail. They got fed by people on the outside. I listened to a young woman who has worked with Mario Joseph talk about the conditions in prison. And this morning she talked about what she knew from being there, is that many of the prisoners didn't have a place to sleep. They slept while others stood. They slept between the feet of other prisoners. This is a place that exists because we have allowed in our community, that's part of our community, an hour and a half from Miami, our community, a community of the African diaspora. We have allowed our government and other governments to mistreat our people in this manner. And we can't continue that. We have allowed our government to tell us lies about the most popular president of the region. We have allowed our government to tell us lies, and some of us accept it, about President Aristide, even though he is supported by 80% of the people. On Tuesday of January 12th, the morning, I went to a press conference of the Lava Loss, and Lava Loss was rolling out its campaign to be involved in a free and democratic election. Last year, elections, attempted elections in the spring occurred, and Lava Loss was not allowed to participate, and Lava Loss boycotted the election. And in many of the polling places, the only people who voted were the people who were paid to man the ballot boxes. And they voted only because they were paid to be there. The voting booths were empty, but the U.S. and its allies reported this as some kind of victory. When these people who don't represent the masses, people who don't have a base among the masses, were still in power. President Bavall decided that Lava Loss cannot participate in popular elections. Last fall, Lava Loss was in court and won a decision by a judge that said it was unconstitutional to ban them, and therefore they had to participate. That judge was fired, sent home, sent packing. I remember thinking Lava Loss was going to participate, and then the decision is reversed. As of January 12th in the morning, Lava Loss was mobilizing itself to build a mass campaign around the elections that were scheduled for February. Now, I understand that the government has indefinitely postponed the elections. But what they declared in the press conference was that there should be no elections, no support, no money is given to the election process by the international community, the UN and the US, which pays for the elections, without the elections being open and democratic. and that Babalatz has to participate.
That's right.
And the election for president, which the U.S. is paying for, was going to pay for it under the auspices of the U.N., would occur in the fall. And Babalatz has said there can be no national elections of any kind without the participation of the people in the democratic process, and that has to include Babalatz. President Aristide was on radio in December saying there has to be open and democratic elections. After the earthquake, President Aristide was on radio saying that he should return. He should return to Haiti because he is capable of helping the people to deal with this horrific event. He should return to Haiti to participate in the rebuilding. He's not asking to be president. He's not asking to serve out his rightful term, which is another 5 years. He's simply saying he should be allowed to return to participate in the process of rebuilding the nation. And we have to call for that. We have to call for that loud and clear, every one of us. We have to do that as vigorously as the people do on the streets of Haiti when they go out and demand the return of President Aristide. And we shouldn't listen to the people who try and deride him. He was elected by the majority of the people. He is the rightful president of Haiti, and every one of us needs to support that. There can be no rebuilding of Haiti without a democratic process. And if Aristide is not allowed to participate, then that's a signal that there is not going to be a democratic process. And this oligarchy, this elite tied to the U.S. for profit making, is going to occur. Haiti was designed, the economic design for Haiti was to have cheap labor. The city is large, built quickly because farmers were forced off their land by economic policies that eliminated profit, made it impossible for farmers to make a living by dumping cheap goods, particularly cheap rice. Instead of exporting rice, now they have to buy rice from the United States, for example, killing the local pigs, destroying the agricultural economy. So the people who lived in the roadside had to go to the cities. You know, people who lived in the countryside had to go to the cities. They had to go live someplace, and those places were the kinds of constructions that were cheap, quickly built, just to house the cheap hands that can build our baseballs, sell our goods, develop our sportswear. Am I going too long? The sweatshops in Haiti make tremendous profits for companies in the U.S. and Canada. The sweatshop owners were the people who have to engineer the overthrow of President Aristide. Those sweatshop owners now come on television and talk about how they're trying to help rebuild the country. We can't accept that. We have to raise our voices. And if it means kicking down doors sometimes to get in to talk to people, we might have to do that because we can't allow things to return to the normal process. That has to be the role that we play. The U.S., Canada, and France are meeting this week behind closed doors. They're meeting in some cold area where they are certain that nobody can come and demonstrate. And they're making plans for how they're going to rebuild Haiti and their vision of a profit-making, labor-intensive,
it's like New Orleans.
Free labor, just like New Orleans all over again. We don't have to allow that. We certainly don't have to allow it without a fight. And now is the time for Haiti to be rebuilt, and it has to be. And we should have something to say about the people that we support. We should have something to say about Haitians being involved. And it has to be Haitian hands that we build, certainly with the entire world involved. There's a tremendous spirit in the world for helping kids in Gaza or raising money for kids in Haiti. You know, people every place are turning their faces towards Haiti and seeing what's happening. There's a lot to be said about the political process in Haiti. There's a lot to be said about what we can do. But let's keep it in mind that it's not just a place we're going to give money to and think that that's the end. We need to know what has been said about the rebuilding, who's doing it, and how we are going to participate. We have to have a voice, and we can. We have a right to have a voice. Those of us in this room, all of us in Oakland, everybody in the African diaspora, we owe Haiti. We owe ourselves.
That's right.
We owe our sense of dignity and humanity. We can't let Betty go down again.
Brother Walter. Walter said it all. I mean, really, he covered it very, very well. That's the situation. And I just want to touch on a couple of things. Walter mentioned the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. Our brothers and sisters in Haiti, on the way here, I spoke to one of them. He called me, one of the community organizers and one of the political prisoners. He's actually on what they would do. It's the same thing what they do there, is the same thing that they do to our brothers and sisters who stood up during the 60s and the 70s, who stood up and struggled, and many of them are in jail today, 30, 40 years later. And our brothers and sisters, they didn't charge them with a political crime. They would, what the system here did, they would charge them with some common crime, like petty crime. You see, to distance them from us, make them, well, these are common criminals. There is nothing political about it. And it's the same thing they are doing at home. So this fellow I was talking to, they charged him with stealing a car. The car was his car. But he was a big leader. So they cooked up some and said that the car was stolen. They cooked up some story that was sent throughout the country and internationally so that nobody would feel that they could stand up for this brother. But the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, we stood up for it. We're not afraid because we knew what it was all about, and we denounced it and carried the campaign, and successfully was let out of jail. He recovered his freedom, but however, he still, the charges were not dismissed. So in that way, he could not really participate in the electoral process. And that's the game that they play. He was talking to me, a number of brothers and sisters, most of them in the city of Port-au-Prince, the capital city. A number of cities were destroyed. It wasn't just Port-au-Prince. A whole number of them was destroyed along the southern coast. And so people are on the streets. That's where they are. No food, no water is being given, even though that food and water is stockpiled at the airport in Port-au-Prince. It's on the tarmac. I was talking to a wonderful lady who called me and said, well, Pierre, you know, I heard that the roads are not accessible. That's why the people are not getting those supplies. And I had to tell her that Walter Riley had actually gone from his house after he had helped remove a lot of people from the war. He, 3 days later, left from his house and went, drove to the airport. He didn't walk, he drove to the airport. And he had driven in different parts of Port-au-Prince. Yes, there were streets that were blocked. So this is an excuse. And so to this day, now here we are, 2 weeks and three, 4 days after this horrific earthquake, still the survivors on the streets because many houses have been destroyed. The few houses that are left standing have been so fractured that people are afraid to go inside because there are still aftershocks. Yet you have all this food and water and medical supplies piled up in the tarmac at the airport and not being delivered to them. Something is going on. There is an attempt, a conscious attempt to starve our people. It could be delivered to them. I'm hearing now that some of the food is being sold. Many of the brothers and sisters have no money. It's being sold. So the conditions are horrible. And I tell you this, the UN has occupied Haiti ever since 2004, since the overthrow President Aristide. The UN forces led by Brazil have been in charge of Haiti since 2004. They have money, they have cars, they have all the stuff that you need. They have helicopters. Another thing the brothers and sisters have asked me to share with you is that they do not want, they've been standing strong against this. Whenever we raise our voices in protest, what they would do, they would have photo ops where, you know, they would show that they are delivering some food to the people. But the way the food is delivered is in a way that's very demeaning, undignified. You see, the food is thrown out from pickup trucks on the ground, or from helicopter hovering, it's thrown on the ground. When you do that to starving, thirsty people, you're inviting a struggle for survival, a free for all. And that's what you're inviting, and then the cameras are there to show. Look at them fighting over the food. But you see, in many areas, the people, our brothers and sisters are organized. They have neighborhood committees that have been set up. The brother I was speaking to earlier had organized a neighborhood committee. And he was calling me to say, look, man, we're running out of supplies, because we did send them some money. And he was calling to say, because rumor had spread that there was some food and water that they were going to purchase, thanks to the donations we sent them, that they were being overwhelmed by more people coming over saying, look, we're hungry, we're thirsty, and they are sharing what they have. He said, Pierre, can you send us some more? Can you send us something? So I'll have to do that either later on or tomorrow through Western Union or Money Plan, send them some more money because it's in short supply. However, I asked him, I said, what about all this food? They still aren't delivering it. He said, no, they are not. We have to deal with it. We have to just count on each other and on you all. And he asked me to convey to you their love, the people's love, because they know you are the one donating. You are the one sending your donations. They also know the conditions that many of our brothers and sisters are living under, because we have been sending delegations to Haiti. Many from our community, like Walter, Dr. Cyril Brown has organized the students from Mary College, who went there and visited and shared the love and the greetings from the Bay Area with her brothers and sisters in Haiti. They in turn sent their love and support to the political prisoners here, the San Francisco 8 and many other political prisoners. And so they know the conditions here. They know what after. They know what happened. And they also look at their own conditions when the police in Haiti or the UN is shooting our young men and young women for no reason. So it's the same history, it's the same conditions, very similar to conditions we are living under. And so they have told me to express to you their love, their understanding, their gratitude for the solidarity and the love that you're sending to them. But they are saying that raise your voices, because what the sacrifices you're making, sending those donations, the donations are sitting right there and not helping them because they are not delivering the food. So raise your voices to elected officials. Congressman Bob Riley has been very supportive. Raise your voice. Let her know that we are watching and we are supporting her efforts and want to encourage her to do this. I want to let you know that you can go on HaitiAction.net. HaitiAction.net. www.haitiaction.net. And this is my sister Nehanda was also in Haiti. And so good to see you, sister. Greeting, meeting with the people, and that was about 2 years ago. And she was there. And so folks know her, and she has represented our community here well with her brothers and sisters in Haiti. So if you go on HaitiAction.net and there's a button you can click if you want to make a donation to the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, either through PayPal or you want to write a check, you'll see it there. And I want to, and I thank you very much, Minister King, for starting this material goods drive. Even though now it may be difficult to get it, but soon as we look for ways to open things up, we can get it there so that the people can have it. And then we'll make a great difference for our brothers and sisters. I want to conclude because I want to leave time, and I know that it's been a long day for many of you, but I want to let you know that the Haitian Revolution It's not something from Mars. It's us.
That's right.
We are Haiti. Haiti is us.
Right.
I know some people may think that it's a cliche that the boat made, but the boat did make many stops. Slavery, it's not that long ago. As I look into many of the faces, we are related. We could be from the same village. Yesterday in Sacramento, I was invited to speak there, and I met this brother, and he said, "Man, I'm from Benin." I said, "Man." He said, "We are cousins." I said, "No, we are brothers."
Right.
And then he told me, he said, "Toussaint Louverture is from my village in Benin. He's on Alada." And I said, "Brother, I met the king of Alada in 2004, just a month, 2 months before the kidnapping of President Aristide, because that was the bicentennial of the Haitian Revolution. And brothers and sisters from throughout Africa had come, and the king of the Aladas had come to pay tribute, to pay his respect to Brother Toussaint Louverture on his tomb. And I was there at the ceremony, so we fell in each other's arms." You know, so it's real. It's real. And I want you to know that in Haiti, the Haitian Revolution is a true Pan-Africanist revolution, because it was brothers and sisters from throughout the continent who dare drop some of us here, some of us in Jamaica, in Trinidad, all over, in Brazil, all over. But then they came together and decided to fight on, to break the chains in unity. And the unknown Maroon, what you see here, he's blowing through a conch shell. The conch shell was used by our Tainos and Arawaks, indigenous people who inhabited the land. And it was a call to rebellion. That's how they called, they communicated with each other. So the Maroons, when they were blowing in that conch shell, Brother Takuma King, if you know him, he brought a conch shell from Haiti, and he's been blowing it ever since. And so it's a call for the family to gather, for us to come together and fight for our freedom, for our liberation. And so I want to stop right now. I want to thank all of you for your love, your solidarity, your support. It means so much to your brothers and sisters in Haiti. And many people recognize that call too. It wasn't when the Africans stood up and rebelled. There were European troops in the armies of Napoleon whose conscience was stirred up, and they said, "Napoleon, you're wrong," and they defected and joined with the Africans to fight against Napoleon's forces. So this is a call for revolution. This is a call for change in the spirit of our foremothers and forefathers and all of those who shed their blood so we could have a better life. We can make a difference in Haiti. We can make a difference right here. A win in Haiti is a win in Oakland. A win in Oakland is a win in Haiti. Our brothers and sisters, they understand it. And I know with your solidarity, you all have understood it, because I've been a witness, having lived in Oakland since 81, and having known about Oakland through its proud history of the Black Panther Party and so much history in the Bay Area, the labor movement. As my brother here is, represents labor. It's a proud history. And I know together we'll make a difference. Thank you so much for your continued love and support.
Big round of applause for Attorney Walter Brown. They, as activists, men from the homeland of Haiti, are certainly more expert in matters than am I. And so they are certainly more than happy to take any of your questions or expressions of concern that you would like to make concerning the suffering in Haiti and the reports that they have given. Does anyone have any questions or thoughts or concerns? And as you are preparing your questions, remember that we're gathering items. I see people coming in as we're talking to you to make their contributions, that we can gather what we need to send. And as Brother Lavoisier said, we have to find our routes that our products are delivered. And just as a reminder, Minister Louis Farrakhan has met with a number of national Black leaders and organizers to find routes into Haiti that are under our control. Again, we're not satisfied to wait for nor to expect that the Red Cross or UNICEF is going to be our friend in this. He said, and I quote, "I wouldn't give a dime to the Red Cross because 9 cents of that dime will never reach the people that we're sending it to." So we're counting on organizers like these to connect with those that are gathering from around the country. And you'll find some information about that in the latest Final Call newspapers that include expressions from Maulana Karenga, Ron Daniels, Minister Farrakhan, and many others that are putting their feet on the ground as quickly as we can to offer help there in Haiti. Are there any questions? Yes, sir.
Can you tell us about where Caliber, Blue Brown, and Vector are they over there trying to?
I don't know specifically what Halliburton and those people are there. I do know that on Tuesday, third Wednesday morning, earthquake occurred 4 to 5 on Tuesday. And Wednesday morning, there was a military plan for Haiti and the military response, as opposed to the humanitarian response. The entire community, the world community, understands that the humanitarian response is different from a military response. And the military response was to guarantee certain forces remain in power and a particular approach, so that the hundreds of thousands of people that were buried were not the first concern, which is consistent with the Halliburton and these people you're talking about. And the hundreds of thousands of people who were injured and outside on the ground were not the first concern. The first concern was the military control and maintaining power of a particular kind, not allowing the people to participate, not allowing the grassroots infrastructure that exists to participate. And there is a grassroots infrastructure. That's one of the things that we're talking about. We are working with the grassroots, but there are many other people there in the grassroots. We don't claim to have contact with all of them. We do have contact with people who represent the largest numbers of folks through the mobilization movements, the organizations, through a lot of lost folks, the people on the ground. But that the military approach to the response guaranteed that those folks who are able to develop the infrastructure for organizing power and profit were first. Halliburton is going to be there, or in their new names, their roles, various forms. We can be certain of that. But we have to try and make a difference, to try something else. And it's important for us to call up our congresswoman and all our other representatives there and say we want something more, for her to have a base for saying that her constituents are not happy. We need to call everybody. They need to do more. They need to do more. They are not doing enough. There is no reason for goods to be sitting on the ground and not getting out.
That's right.
It is unconscionable that there should be people dying and covered when they could have been saved. That people need hospital care and they can't get them. They're only in certain areas. That the UN brings its forces, its truck with not enough goods into the middle of a crowd and dumps it, and then photographs it as a violent response. I can tell you that when I was there on Thursday night, realizing that we were out of water and no food provisions, if there was water around, I would have tried to get it because my wife and daughter were there. We were with other people that needed it. I would try to get it if somebody comes and dumps it in the area. I can tell you that when we were there, we didn't see people climbing over each other. We didn't see people pulling things away from each other. But when people are desperate, and the desperation is man-made, then we can expect there to be this kind of thing. The actual nature of the folks is not to be responding this way. That's all. I am, just to be clear, Minister Keaton, thank you for all that you do and everything, particularly around this, and certainly around us and Rank. I am from Durham, North Carolina. That's where I grew up. I'm not Haitian. I was involved in the civil rights movement. But I am involved in this issue, as I am in some others, because it politically resonates with me that this is the birth of the resistance to slavery in a very particular way in this country. And when I travel in the Caribbean or in South America or in Central America, and I see the Maroon communities and see how people respond to the struggle, and they're
sense of identity with what we are here and what we go through, knowing a whole lot more about us than we know about them. When we realize that there are people in Oakland that don't even know that there are black people in South America, that there's some education that we have to engage in, and that we realize that people in Oakland cannot uniformly identify with the struggles of people in Haiti, that means that we have education to engage in. We have to do a lot of work. The majority of the people know better, but there are a lot that don't. Thank you.
Sister Judy.
Sir, do you have a website? And for those who want to give, who would you check out too? How do you give?
The website is HaitiAction.net. If you go to HaitiAction.net, that's the organization, that's the mobilization that we're involved with. We start out as people with social conscience engaged in social political justice movement. We built the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund as part of that movement. When you go to that website, you'll see in the upper right hand corner, Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. We're often referred to as HERF by some people, but the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. Click on that and you'll see all the information about us, where to send checks, money orders, credit cards, or PayPal donations. We are at the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, not set up to handle the goods itself. There are many folks that can, organizationally, can handle goods. What we're trying to do, for example, is to use money to buy goods on the ground. So we were having a discussion with somebody who called up and said they need some food, and we have some money. So we say, go buy the food, buy the American rice, because it's cheaper. For the community organization that's in Port-au-Prince. This one happened to be in Port-au-Prince. But we also are working with farmers who are trying to produce stuff. And their goods are going to cost more. And we are also providing some funding for those farmers to continue and to prepare for the summer and the growing season. But we want to buy from them too. One of the things we've discussed with folks, and it's considered, is that we want to give money to people to buy things in Haiti. So that if we buy things at the market in Haiti, it circulates. But if we give them shoes, it's not quite the same kind of circulation. Now, I understand the importance of people giving shoes and shipping them to Haiti, and a lot of that needs to be done. Who's that? Paris Hilton is doing that. And that's important. It's important to use and utilize that expression of unity. We should build upon that. We should ship it there. At some point, I would expect that the longshore workers are going to be doing what they can to see containers get there free. They'll be up and down the coast because that's who they are. I expect the labor movement to be organizing things. But also, it's particularly important in terms of the way we work with people, that we give money to people to buy goods when they're on the ground, because that circulates in the community. And it helps those people to survive.
Sister in the back. Scarf, blue scarf. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you, dear sister. And we certainly encourage those that have access to the youth that are here in the town hall, or if you know those who do, to help us make contact and facilitate those meetings. We have been to some of the local colleges. We are more than happy to visit the high schools, the group clubs, the church clubs, the youth groups, to share with our young men and women the discipline that is helpful in our engaging law enforcement and authorities on the street. So that's an ongoing work, but it does require more help. One of the things that we're reaching out for now is in the Oscar Grant case, to make sure that our people in Southern California are at least as well informed about what is happening here as we are. So we are making contact now into the Southern California colleges, some of the schools, to see if we can bring the level of political education and the disciplinary training somewhere in the mix with our young people on how we can avoid some of the traps that rogue law enforcement officers lay. Let me say this clearly, though. Those young men were not at fault.
Right.
I want to say it because when we hear, sometimes it can be painful. We have here the uncle of Oscar and the father of some of the other young men, and it can sometimes appear in the heart that our children are being criticized for what happened on that evening.
He was acting
out of peace. Oh, no, I understand. I heard you. I feel you. But I'm just sharing so that those families that are here don't feel as though what is being suggested is that they should have contained the circumstance. There are things that we can do to contain a wild beast, but sometimes the wild beast is still a wild beast.
Right.
So we have to be as best trained as we can, but we know that we're dealing with a wild beast. So I appreciate my sister's comments. Thank you very much, sir.
My understanding is that March is the beginning of the rainy season in Haiti, and there are still bodies that are buried under the rubble. The potential for disease is extraordinary under these circumstances, and yet you don't see any indication that the steps that are being taken by the officials are going to avert what will be another disaster. And I'm wondering what here we might be able to do to be able to raise the alarms now and not wait for another disaster as the people are sleeping in the mud, having no sanitation facilities, and bodies are still rotting in the rubble. It seems almost as if that's a prescription for genocide.
We received an email just today, this afternoon, I read, that the disease is starting to spread already, that is dysentery, the diarrhea, the lack of latrines, that it's starting, and it's a particular concern because people are not able to get the supplies from the UN and from the other forces. What we can do now is raise our voices to our representatives. I think we have to do that. That's what we can do, one thing we can do. We need to all call and say we are concerned, that we are hearing that people are still not getting supplies. We are confident that that's the accurate information and that other steps have to be taken, and we can't go slow anymore. I was on a telephone call with the State Department a week ago today, and we're being told that they would start releasing supplies to people and give us an opportunity to go to get the supplies starting Sunday. And we have not gotten any from them. The emails today that are circulating And so they asked me for a form to be filled out. And on the ground, and some of the community organizations are not going to have those forms, and they're not going to have the kinds of documentation that the UN, USAID, NOAA, or SOAL documentation. And we have to say, stop that. And everybody knows who's in Congress. We have to do that. Let me just tell you something else that is appalling. I was on the phone earlier in the week with somebody who had gone to members of the Black Caucus and said to them, we need to report to you that supplies are not getting out, that our people on the ground are telling us they can't get anything. And three congressmen, members of the Black Caucus, and their staff were aghast because they had no idea that that was true. Now, where have they been? And who are they? And why do we have them? When they don't know what's happening in Haiti, and the whole world knows that supplies are not getting out. Now that's something for us to be mad about.
That's right.
And we should make our voices known. Now I talked with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, and she tried to correct that. That's why we ended with the telephone call to the State Department. But everybody has to be pushed more. She has to be pushed more. Everybody has. This is not acceptable. It is not something that we should tolerate. And no matter how we love each other, if we find ourselves allowing this to happen, then we're not loving each other well enough.
That's right. Let me just say, in the political connections that we must make, that we learned when we went in the Oscar Grant case for Assembly Bill 312 to Mr. Amiano, that elected officials are often as ignorant, or even more so, than brothers and sisters in the community that's hearing about what happened in rumor mills. So when we arrived in Sacramento and AB 312 was being introduced, one young man that attempted to allow me to speak before the Assembly Committee on that day, when he asked what I was there for, and I told him, you might recall, and I said it here in the town hall, he asked me, who is Oscar Grant? And here was a bill that was being introduced specifically as a result of the murder of Oscar.
That's right.
So let's not assume that the elected officials know better, nor should we assume that they're willing to do better.
Right.
So when we find Black elected officials, they're our brothers and sisters, so at least we don't catch them all the time. We can catch them Sunday morning at Allen Temple or in the neighborhood church. Is that true?
Yes.
And we should let them know what we think. When Mr. Swanson went through with Assembly Bill 1586, I didn't have a chance to see him, but when I got to him, I let him know, it's on the record, that I disagreed with certain things that were done. We owe it to ourselves to tell them. We can't say, because they're Black, just go with the flow.
No.
That's politics as usual. And that will not suffice us in this hour. We owe it to ourselves to let them know very clearly what our thoughts are on the issues. And if they go wrong continually, then we will replace them. And on that wise, I don't know if anyone's here from San Francisco. I want to congratulate our town hall and activists there that have successfully made a filing with more than 7,500 signatures gathered in 10 days in the rain against County Supervisor Sophie Maxwell, a sister. But a sister that, when toxic poisoning was revealed against the children in Bayview Hunters Point, that refused to acknowledge, accept, or stand for the children, the elders, and others that was sickened. So that recall effort was filed, I think, yesterday. And so continuing, it's county supervisor. There's got to be somebody that can do it better. So I think Sister Judy wants to run for office, and we'll find, and we will vote for her. Sister Judy,
I have one question. So are you recommending that we call the Congresswoman's office and let her know our disdain for what's happening over here?
I am on Congresswoman Barbara Lee's advisory committee. We have been in contact with her a lot and her staff. But every person that's elected responds when they know that the people that put them in office are concerned. Now, if you also have Congress telephone number, you can get it on the internet, call him. If you have Maxine Waters, call her. I mean, even though you're not here, call your friends in other places. There's no reason why we shouldn't be mobilizing nationally around this. Get everybody to do something.
Feinstein and Boxer.
Feinstein and Boxer need to be called, yes. Yes, and they can respond. When I was missing, my daughter's husband's law firm got in contact with people in D.C. and their firm. And Senator Feinstein started to say that she was helping to look for me because I was missing in Haiti for a while. And she responded because people asked her to do something. She doesn't know me. Congresswoman Barbara Lee did a lot to do things. The people on the ground here, Pierre's wife said that he was claiming he was responsible for me being missing, which is what he does. He takes responsibility for so much. So there's work being done, and sometimes they can respond when you make noise. Those kinds of things are a little easier. The hard decision is jumping on somebody and saying, well, it's not good enough just because I know the president and to remain on good terms with him. I need to push that person a little bit more. And that only happens when we push.
That's right.
And let me tell you, I saw some of the most horrendous things that I would never want to see again. And it's enough for us to be mad that this continues, that people are still dying, and that those people are trapped, and maybe some of them are still alive, but we know they were alive a few days ago. There were others in there dying. We know that many people are not getting medical care and will die. We're told from emails today that people are getting tetanus. We're told that people are not going to be sent to the medical hospitals in Florida, and that people with tetanus can die within a short period of time. And that's just a small thing, tetanus treatment. And little cuts, you know what they are. If you get a cut and you don't have a tetanus shot, you get rushed off to the doctor to get a tetanus shot. That'll kill you in Haiti because you don't get medical care. And so little kids and old people and young people and healthy people and sick people that can be treated are going to die this week. And it can be prevented. But we need to make people feel it. We really need to make people feel it so that they will move. And it's a shame that there isn't more being done in Washington to raise the hue and cry that's necessary. We saw what happened with Katrina. We don't have to let that same thing happen. And here, all we are talking about is releasing the medical care, giving it to people who need it right now, today, tomorrow. Tomorrow somebody will die, and more than one person. Partners in Health, who we have worked with, said 20,000 people a day are dying unnecessarily. 1,000 is too much.
If I can just get a point of clarity, I think here that you could say that the roads that the press has reported have been closed as an excuse for the products not leaving the airport, that those roads are actually open, and
yes,
that supplies can in fact be delivered.
I came out on roads.
Yeah, definitely.
And quite a number of reporters, Amy Goodman, we have Kevin Pina on the ground, we have Anderson Cooper of CNN. A number of them were very irate because they said, and we also witnessed how many of the reporters were trooping all over the place. You know, they didn't walk from the airport to get there. They drove in their cars and we would see them getting in their cars. And they too were very irate about this situation. So, things can get through, but they need to make sure they have 15,000 Marines. Many of them are our young men and women, our nephews, cousins, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, who are in the military. Now, soldiers are trained to obey orders. Now, what if they really turn them into a mission of life-saving? Instead of putting bullets in those backpacks, and carrying those big guns, put the gun down or put it on that shoulder. And on this shoulder, put some medical supplies and food and water and walk it to some of the places where there might be a work closure or something. So we need to push for that. That mission has to change into a life-saving mission.
May I ask, Sister Judy, do we have a need for more locations for the buckets to pick up the supplies?
Yes, we do. Well, I'm hoping that you'll allow us to have a place to barrel here, sir, if that's okay. The Sister from Mary College has volunteered to take on one, so I'll be talking with Brother Jack to have these things delivered. And if you know anybody that can take place a barrel and put information out there and just gather these things, they're simple items. And if I don't have your email addresses, please give them to me and I'll send you the information. This is just simple stuff. You can go to the Dollar Tree, spend $20, and that's a huge bag of stuff. And if all of us everybody do that, that's a problem resolved. Those are active supplies that people can use. And if you know people that want to donate money, let's give that money to the brothers.
That's
there
right.
It is.
That's
so see,
right.
I'll be standing in the back.
All right,
thank you.
If I can just take a moment to share some of the report from Dr. Tosco, who is a lot of willing, dog willing on the ground right now at SFO. But she did share that once they arrived into Haiti, that they were able to significantly impact care by running a 14-hour shift that ended at 7 a.m. Previously, no medical coverage where they were after 5 p.m. So they went in to provide medical service at night into the early morning hours. Previously, no medical coverage. All NGOs present seemed shocked at their readiness to extend the coverage time. And this is not a 9-to-5 job when people are dying on the streets. And so we thank Dr. Tosco and those doctors that traveled. Give them a big round of applause. She wrote that they served over 300 patients cared for inside of tents, and that 60 patients still housed in earthquake-damaged buildings. Major medical and surgical supplies they were able to deliver, and they're eager to report more. And she's tired, her legs and feet are swollen, but God willing, we should have Dr. Tosco here with us next partly Saturday to continue in our report. So let's give Mr. LeBossier and Mr. Riders a with us, and I know my brother didn't get a chance to hear what I said in the earlier part of the meeting about the settlement offer that has been made, and I don't know if he wants to say anything in that regard as of yet. Was there anything, Brother Stevens, that you'd like to share with us? Please receive our brother and uncle, Oscar Grant, Brother Stevens.
You know, there's not a whole lot that I can say except for the fact that I'm still in a daze from what recently just happened. But I guess what I could ask from you that are sitting in this room today, or at least make you aware of, we as a family was going to have a family meeting, and then we personally actually were going to meet with John to talk about what just happened. And we have our own questions that we'd like to ask. So if there's anyone out here that are interested in asking a question or questioning even what happened, if you can, write it down and let me have it. Because, you know, we can only think so much as a family because we're emotionally involved in this. You know, but those of you that have been watching and recognize that maybe what occurred didn't quite fit in the idea of things that we thought should have occurred. If you have a question concerning it, let me have it so that I can look at it and even ask maybe tomorrow that question. And then bring back next Saturday what we get. You know, just going outside of Oxford, there's a lot that we must do as a people, especially within our community. I was in East Palo Alto today, and you know, of course, there's been 13 killings in East Palo Alto since the beginning of the year. I mean, it's extremely bad, you know. Yet we have our own brothers and sisters, Haitians, that are dying from an act of, or dying from an act of God, but yet at the same time are dying because of our own neglect to reach out and help. And we're sure some of it is by design, but also some of our own failures to recognize that our help is needed today.
That's right.
We need to begin to reach out and help one another and stop destroying ourselves. You know, I have to be careful what I say right now because of where I'm at in my feelings. But I do ask that if you have questions that you'd like to ask, I mean, you can't personally say it, maybe ask John yourself. Write it down. And there are some questions that I might feel now. If, you know, for instance, go ahead if you have a question.
His fiance, where did she sign the agreement?
Where?
Yes.
Just a quick history. Normally in the past, we as a family always went as a group when it came to mediation and discussing concerning settlement. In this particular instance, none of us was made aware that this was even going to happen. And
clue, problem, red flag.
So there was something that was transpiring behind closed doors that, anyhow, you know, we weren't there. How it occurred, when it occurred, you know, I'm in as much of a daze as this as you are. You know what I'm saying?
If it were done outside of an office, other place, and if she had been under the influence of alcoholic beverages and she was then enticed to sign, then I would say that's under duress and that needs to be addressed, you know, in terms of her state of mind. Because I was shocked. I was upset because there's no way a settlement of that sort should even be allowed. And if the court still has to make a decision on that, then I would argue under duress.
Right.
That would be the strongest position I think one could take in that.
My sister Wanda and myself, of course, and the other family members, thought about that and talked about that. But our problem is that Sabina is Tatiana's mother. And whatever she feels in her heart is right, we may not agree to it, you know, because we're much older, wiser. We understand the value of money. We understand the magnitude of this case. We understand, too, that, you know, my nephew, of course, a young man of this community, was murdered. And so we would have, you know, just being who we are, but have thought more deeply, irregardless of what might have been offered. So, you know, all I can say is that even though it may have been under duress, the individual that finally made the decision has also stated that. And maybe I could be wrong in that respect because I don't know, you know, I'm probably gazing into some legal stuff that I'm totally ignorant to. But the fact is that maybe she was coerced and maybe she won't say she was. Maybe. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. I can't talk about it.
Good statement. I don't want Cephas to speak too far in it because there's a family that has to have a conversation. And he's asking that we give him questions that he can present, if they haven't thought into it yet, to the attorney. And we don't need to hear necessarily the details of the internal workings of the Grant and Johnson family. And so we want to be mindful that the family still has to get together. Can everybody join me in that?
Yes.
And allow them that time and space. But he is asking that if there are issues, someone presented an issue earlier before you came, and I presented it while I was speaking, that suggested that that judge cannot give his final settlement ruling until all of the settlement has been resolved. And as you know, it all hasn't been resolved. So it's going to take some time. I don't know the calendar.
But those are questions that I need, because, you know, I mean, I was going to think about so much. And of course, the motion is involved. So, I mean, that I hadn't even thought about that.
And Bart is publicly stated, I'm told by Jack, and I haven't read it yet, but I have seen statements where they've declared in their statements that this is a partial settlement, and that, according to what Jack read, if I got it correctly, that they want to also settle with Juan. So whether or not that's true, yet to be seen.
There was an attempt, just quickly, there was an attempt to settle with my sister, but, you know, being who she is and recognizing the loss, the magnitude said no way. So we in this battle in itself, go ahead, Shannon.
Part of what you're saying, he's backing up. He's happy to settle with Sabrina, and Mark is right there to settle with Sabrina, and we're happy. And he's going to work to settle with one. And Johanna Method gave a statement saying he is happy that Juan is receiving the, Tatiana is receiving the settlement. Mark did the right thing. She doesn't have a father. Well, idiot, you're the one that killed the father. So why is he even speaking? What Bart is doing right now, they're saying they're going to work, they're happy they settled with Sabina. They're going to work with Wanda, but now we're going after the young men on their lawsuit. We're going to battle them viciously, because they are the cause of Oscar Grant's death. Now they're blaming the young men for Oscar Grant's death.
I do want to share this. You know, I have been actively involved with Minister Muhammad, of course, going to the Bark Board. We're making discussions concerning AB 312 at the time, and we saw what happened with that. And then, of course, I've been invited to join Bark in a sense, a member of Bark, to go to the State Assembly to meet different representatives concerning 1586 that Andre Swanson ushered in for us. And, you know, and personally talking to him and hearing him, you know, because I'm like Minister Muhammad, not necessarily agreeing with the particular bill in itself and the way it's written. I'm just sharing this is that there's just so much politicking going on and just so much stuff going on emotionally with the family. And, you know, so, you know, I try to be slow to react, but at the same time, I want to be able to do the right thing and just share this. The same day that I was unaware that Sabina was signing, prior to that, January 1st, I said, this is the time that Tony Peroni needs to be looked at more thoroughly, because we haven't really discussed him. We just kind of said it in these closed doors. So I initiated an official complaint. And in that complaint, you know, of course, I stated what had occurred and that this was an official complaint, and that I didn't want a response to that my complaint had been filed. And watching the paperwork, what happened with me was that the official person that received the complaint happened to not have his position anymore. So he had to forward it to some other individuals. So I haven't heard from these individuals, but these individuals evidently forwarded to some sergeant that's supposed to be investigating Tony Peroni, which is internal. And on Wednesday, when Sabina supposedly had, made an agreement, I got an email, and it was like a slap in the face, because it did say that we did receive the email. Tony Peroni is under investigation. However, the investigation is still pending, or is pending based upon the investigation. You know, and I mean, why did it come that day? So what I'm saying is that, you know, we're dealing with an organization that is flatly with the intent to look good despite our efforts to make them come clean.
That's right.
You know, and so, you know, just like what we're hearing in Haiti, there's things that are going on that we just can't trust certain organizations.
That's right.
You know, and we as a people have to really begin to band together and hold hands and make it be known that these organizations and so-called helpers that are supposed to be like helping the brothers and sisters in Haiti in itself is not doing what they claim they're doing. You know, we just got to begin to be more wiser. And if I'm gonna give something, I'm not giving it to the Red Cross. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know. But it's good to know about the HaitianAction.net, you know, so that if I do give something, you know, just like sister say, you know, we gotta give it to something that's gonna work. You know, I'm just still just well, you know.
Cephas?
We need to start winding down. We're at the end of the line. We have a question here and a question here.
Well, yeah, actually, it's not quite a question, but I think when you have such an obvious move to divide and conquer, such a vicious, open move, at a certain point, you have to say, how many times are we going to let these crappy things pass? No, I'm sorry. At a certain point, you have to say, look, is there something I can extract from this? So, we won't again and again and again. This won't happen. So let me just share a little something with you that I've fallen upon throughout the years. When I was in the Panthers, before I was in the Panthers, we had defense committees. One of the things that works, believe it or not, is democracy. You can actually draw up an organization that says, we are the defense committee. No agreements will be made with the state except by majority vote. I've actually participated in such. So that no errant family member or others would ever speak or accept anything outside of that framework. This can be done, has been done, and may I say should have been done. Now, learn. It doesn't have to come out like this. You don't have to let them play with our lives like this. We can do better. Here we have an article. I have to, listen. Grant's Friends lawsuit is nothing more than a money grab. Whether you like it or not, murder is a political question in this country. And you have to begin by saying, what is it based on? This country, money. This author admits openly that the man was killed unjustly. Therefore, in this society, the only way to correct that is they got to pay. You understand? This is nonsense. People deserve to be paid when they are abused by the state. Now, if that's true, then you have to start saying, well then, is there any way that we can inadvertently help the enemy? Unfortunately, there are. One, don't talk to these people. You got nothing to say to them. I read an article, unfortunately, in the paper, around the first, that actually claims that stated that members of the family were saying that Bart was doing an excellent job with the police. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. I haven't researched it. But I can tell you, it's not going to help you when you get to court. And then they start saying, all they're trying to do is get the money. They said we were doing great. You see, that's why you don't say nothing to them. You identify your enemies and you act accordingly. Right?
Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask some specifics about the case or the civil suit because it's been a while since it was filed. My understanding was it was set to go, tentative court date had been set for October around thereabout of this year. And I can't remember who exactly was named. Is it just Bart the agency or specific officers? Is Dorothy Duggar, Chief G? Who's named in this? Because it sounds like Meserly feels like, you know, he's not a part of the civil suit.
He's not.
Okay.
The organization, BART itself, is totally responsible. Now, we have been made aware that Tony Peroni basically has already filed bankruptcy, has retained an attorney. I'm not sure the details of Dominici, but in some incidents, it's very similar. You know, and I can't go into anything further than that. You know, that's just some knowledge that, and I can't even say it's accurate knowledge, but what we've been told. So when it comes to Mesley himself, he's no longer employed by BARC, but however, BARC is responsible because he was employed by them at the time. So the suit has BARC held accountable.
Okay, and no individuals are named in it? Okay.
Thank you all very much. Can we give each other a big round of applause? As always, we open in prayer, so we would be dutiful to close in God's name. I'm going to ask Pastor to come back and take us home in God's name. Reverend Gordon Humphrey.
Let's pray. Father, we are so grateful for the time to be able to share. And we bring all of the concerns before you. Our school grant case and their family and our brothers and sisters in Haiti. And let us respond in accordance with what we've heard and continue our passion for our people as we leave here. And we must know that we're tied to each other, and so bless us as we go. And it's to that end that we pray, and everyone say, amen.
Amen. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.